I work with people that go through transitions, go through restructurings, go through layoffs, get fired. I mean, they just get fired, right? And all of a sudden, they become a different person. They're not the person that I know, that avatar that I'm so used to working with. They become like robotic. I got to do this. I have to follow this plan. That's all well and good to get you from step one to two to three. And that's going to give you a sense of security, which is going to help dilute the fear. But don't lose who you are in that. Don't lose yourself. Don't lose what makes you so distinctive. And that is my biggest piece of advice I can give.
Hello, welcome to A Work in Purpose. If you're asking yourself, what is my purpose? Then this podcast is for you. I am Wing, your host. In each episode, I interview people who are living out their purpose. I share their journey and the wisdom they've learned along the way so you too can discover and start living out your purpose. In this episode, we will be discussing how to navigate job transitions, especially during these uncertain times when many people, including myself, have recently been laid off. As someone who has been through the emotional roller coaster of the job search process many times before, I know how vulnerable of a time this transitional phase can be. But based on my personal experience, along with so many guests on this podcast, I also know how this period could be a turning point for you to step even closer to your purpose. That is why I am so energized to invite some career coaches on this podcast for the next few episodes. I hope their insights can help you not only land your next job, but to land a job that fulfills you. Joining us today is Paul Larson, a career and leadership coach and the author of the book, Find Your Voice as a Leader. Paul has extensive experience coaching over 500 leaders worldwide, including at top companies such as Salesforce, Charles Schwab, and Cisco. In this episode, we'll discuss practical ways to stand out in your job search, overcome imposter syndrome during interviews, and discover your values and purpose to land a fulfilling career. Whether you're currently going through a job transition or looking to change your career, this episode is for you. So sit back, relax, and let's dive into this insightful conversation with Paul Larson. And if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a five-star review. Hello, welcome to a Work in Purpose podcast, Paul Larson. I'm really excited to have you on.
I'm excited to be here, Wing. I mean, this is great. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So you are a leadership coach, speaker, and the author of the book, Find Your Voice, Voice, as a Leader. Can you share a little bit about your background, about what you do as a leadership coach?
There's the elevator speak to that, right? Which we're so well, we have that algorithm that is so well imprinted on our mind. But really, what I love to do is I love to help people break free from their limiting beliefs. So any kind of role you're in life, you're a leader. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter what your position description says. It doesn't matter where you work. It doesn't matter who reports to you or who doesn't. It doesn't matter. It has no bearing on what you're doing. You are leading yourself in life. And sometimes we're so confined with these limiting beliefs. They just like they creep up in our mind and they kind of like keep us stuck and they kind of like push us down, down, down. So as a leadership coach, I like to help people identify what those are. And then we work through like extracting yourself from those, right? So it's not about overcoming things all the time. It's just really being aware of what those limiting beliefs or thoughts are and then releasing those and then seeing what you can do. So I love, 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 love what I do because I get to work with incredible people and I get to see what they get to do and I get to touch that, right? That is so cool. And then I get to meet fabulous people like you know, who are bringing purpose to the world and helping people find their purpose and so forth. So in a nutshell, that's what I do.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. So, as we know, many people are being laid off nowadays in this current economy, and they're going through a challenging job transitional phase. So, what would you say are some of the most important things that people should be doing, but they're probably not doing it during this job transitional period.
Yeah. So I've been there. I've gotten laid off. I've gotten terminated. I've been there, done that. I've also been the person who tells people they're getting laid off and terminated. So I've been on all different roles on that. When that happens, and it happens all the time, right? But when it happens, we kind of fall into a routine, and LinkedIn is especially, you know, is especially a key component of that routine. We go into that whole LinkedIn kind of like robotic algorithm. Okay, you got to get your network squared away. You got to get your spreadsheets out there, and you got to start connecting with people. You got to start doing this. You got to start doing that. And that's all well and fine, because usually what happens when we get that notification, our fear takes over. Oh my gosh, I'm losing my job. And the fear can be sadness and disappointment and anger and discouragement. But it can be fear. It can be wrapped up in this fear. So what happens when we're in fear? We're like, what am I going to do? How am I going to eat? How am I going to like pay my bills? How am I going to take care of my family? How am I going to just take care of myself? How am I going to take care of my dog, my cat, whatever it is? So that fear begins to kind of wrap itself around us. So we begin to look for ways to get out of that fear. Like, okay, I need to take care of X, Y, Z, this task. So what we end up doing is we end up kind of following the mapping, the protocol, the roadmap that LinkedIn and all those wonderful career experts have outlined for us. But just as important as that is not to lose yourself in that roadmap, not to lose yourself in that path, not to lose yourself in sort of those steps. And that's what sometimes happens. I certainly, myself included, but I work with people that go through transitions, go through restructurings, go through layoffs, get fired. I mean, they just get fired, right? And all of a sudden, they become a different person. They're not the person that I know, that avatar that I'm so used to working with. They become like robotic. I got to do this. I have to follow this plan. That's all well and good to get you from step one to two to three. And that's going to give you a sense of security, which is going to help dilute the fear. But don't lose who you are in that. Don't lose yourself. Don't lose what makes you so distinctive. And that is my biggest piece of advice I can give.
That's awesome. So what would you say are some of the practical actions people can take to remind themselves of their true essence throughout this process?
Well, first of all, yeah, great question. First of all, it's sort of like being aware of what your true essence is, being aware of what makes you so distinctive over anyone else. What makes you, what value do you bring that is different than anyone else? What makes you who you are? So really it's about your story. Really, it's about, as I say, in terms of what I work on, your inner voice. What does that speak? What makes you, when you've got candidates, let's just take the restructuring exercise, right? Since that's really the focus of what we're talking about. When you're going out and you're interviewing and you're going out and looking for work and you are meeting with people at companies, what is going to make you stand up, stand out, stand alone? Not stand together with everyone else that's going through that same process. And a lot of us have gone through interviews, both as candidates and certainly as people who hire. And I can tell you, when somebody stands in front of me, and not necessarily literally, they can certainly be sitting, but when they're standing in front of me and they have a story, and it's tailored to them, and they've authored it, and it's really who they are. It shows their human spirit. It shows their human fails, their failures. It shows their successes. I will remember and imprint that person and want to bring that person around and enroll that person with me in my organization versus the other 98 people who might be really talented, but I can't tell them apart. And what are they going to bring to my culture? companies nowadays, and you probably are very well aware of this, with your history and with the people that you interact with and the people you bring on this incredible podcast, companies are looking for that differentiation, that component, that fraction that's going to make them a little bit different than anyone else. And normally that's found in the culture. And what makes up a culture? People. So when they're looking to bring people on, especially nowadays, they're looking for that art, not the science. The science is following the steps. The science is following the LinkedIn roadmap. The science is following the policies. The science is following everything you're supposed to do. Perfect. Get that down. But what canvas are you creating? What work of art are you creating? What brings you alive in this? And how will people know that? So that's what, that's the piece I really, really want to push for folks. Don't be afraid to show your true self. Don't be afraid to show yourself. If people react a certain way to that, and they may not react in a positive way, then you don't want to work there. Because think about it. If you end up working there and then you show who you are, and you might as well know beforehand if there's flow or if there's friction.
Love that. Thanks for sharing that. So let's say I'm someone listening to that and that all makes sense to me, but then like shortly after hearing that, the fear comes back and just takes over the mind. And then like you're kind of reacting and going through the checklist, as you mentioned. How does one break free of that once that fear trigger kicks in again?
Yeah, sure. I have a three-step process around that. And you mentioned it in that diagram. So that will happen. That happens all the time. I mean, that happens all the time, even when we're completely, fully aware of who we are. We still get into like, oh my gosh. I mean, look at COVID. We were running around, you know, buying all the toilet paper and cleaning our groceries and doing all this stuff. And we were just following all those rules because we didn't know. So we, no matter how aware we are, that will happen. And especially when you're in an environment that could be new, you know, when you get restructured or you lose your job or you, that can be very new to people and it can be very, very uncomfortable. So the key right there is awareness. First of all, be aware of when that does happen. Okay, wait a minute. I'm being led by fear here. I'm being led by my fear mindset on this. So just that awareness that you're doing that. Don't beat yourself up over it. It will happen. And then you want to do the second A. So this is a 3A process. First is awareness. The second is advocacy. You want to just advocate for yourself, right? So when you are out there looking for your next career story, looking for your next career landing, looking for that next job, you are your own advocate on that. Nobody else is. So I know there are people that, like myself, that will absolutely help and support. And you've got a great network and relationships and friends and fellow former colleagues. But you've got to be your own advocate. So you've got to be aware of when you snap out of when you snap back in, excuse me, to that fear mindset. You then have to advocate for yourself to say, okay, wait a minute. Okay, this is cool. This is okay. I'm aware of what's going on here. Now I've got to be kind of find my own internal validation to, again, tell my story, and it's going to be uncomfortable and it might be a little awkward. And the third A, so it's awareness, advocacy, and the last is action. We can have all the awareness we want. We can have all the advocacy we want. But if we don't take action, then we're just really aware people who don't go anywhere, right? We just are like, oh my gosh, he's so fully aware, but it's like he doesn't do anything. And you really have to take action. It might be a small step. It might be a cold calling. It might be reaching out to people that you don't really know. I've got folks that I've worked with that we would consider to be seasoned executives, seasoned leaders, right? And they still will freeze up. That's what fear is. We freeze up. And that's why the science of following those steps can be very helpful, because it breaks you out of that. Okay, if I just do one thing on my spreadsheet today or my network map or whatever it is I'm following, that breaks you out of that fear mindset. It unfreezes you. It unsticks. It gets you unstuck. So again, awareness, advocacy, and then action of any kind just kind of gets you moving again.
So if when we overcome the fear mindset, is there something that we should replace that with? Or
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I love your questions. You have just a natural ability to ask questions, my friend. Of course, you're going to replace it with the growth mindset. So fear, the fear mindset, which all of us find ourselves in, that's the resistance to change, right? We've probably all seen this in organizations. We probably sometimes ourselves have felt this way. It's not the way we do things. I've never done it this way. I don't want to do that. I'm not going to try this. I don't want to do that. It's fear, right? It's keeping us the same. The growth mindset is the opposite. The growth mindset says, no, wait a minute. I want to try this. I want to try this kind of new thought that I'm thinking. I want to try a new behavior or action. It can be as simple as I want to try a new food that I've never tried before, right? That's growing versus I'm going to go back and have the same meal every single day of my life at that same restaurant or in my kitchen or whatever it is. No, I want to try something different. I want to put on my, what we call the curiosity hat. Mm. When you are in this type of mode that people find themselves in right now, which is looking for a new role, being sort of like pushed out from where they are, acknowledge all of this, right? Bring that awareness and yeah, I'm pissed or I'm sad or all those things. Don't hide that. Like process that. It's a loss. Sometimes it's a good loss, right? It really can be a good loss. And sometimes it's not. It's like, oh, I really liked working there. I liked working with all these people. So process all of that and then move on. Understanding that if you choose to, only if you choose to, it can be a growth experience. Mm. But it's entirely up to you. Remember, we choose every single thought that occurs in our head. That's the one place that nobody else is at except us. You know, and I don't care what people say. It's like we choose those thoughts. So how you choose your thoughts around any situation is what you're going to feel and what you're going to bring into your life. So if you look at every situation as something that's disappointing, anger, mad, and so forth, and you can't get through that, guess what? You're going to be bringing that more into your existence. That goes back to what I said earlier. And this is really important. The science of finding a new job doesn't always allow us to bring new feelings in. So if you get laid off at a company, you get restructured out, you get fired from a company, and you're pissed or you're sad or you're disappointed, and you don't process that and you don't kind of bring yourself in and allow yourself to kind of feel that, lean into it, and then work through it. When you look for that new job, you're bringing those feelings in with you. You might be able to do a good act in the interview, but guess what? You're going to be bringing that baggage, that luggage, that backpack with you with all of those feelings. I've been there. I've done it. And I've seen it at companies where we've hired people and they bring in all these feelings from the past. It happens all the time, Wing, in relationships. We get out of a relationship. Oh, my gosh, finally, I broke free of her. I broke free of him. Oh, my gosh, he was bad for me. She was bad for me, whatever it was, right? And what do? We rebound and we don't process a new type of feeling. We don't bring in that art. We don't paint something different. And we find ourselves in a relationship that is almost identical to the one we just left. The same holds true in jobs. So that's why following the science is good to move you ahead, but you've got to bring in the art. You've got to bring in the what you feel and what makes you unique. And that's the whole point of what I do with helping people kind of with their limiting beliefs and their voice and all of that. Because that's what I've learned, right, in my own history.
I love that, bringing the art to the science of learning the next opportunity. I want to ask you, so let's talk about the different stage of the job search process. So sure. Like, earlier on in the process, when you're building your resume again and applying for jobs, How can people apply the growth mindset to that stage of the process versus a fear mindset?
Yes. Can you tell what I'm saying? Uh-huh. It's say yes.
Yes.
Say yes. Say yes. 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 One of the biggest stumbling blocks, one of the biggest obstacles I find when people are looking for a new job. Again, they follow the science. So they get out their spreadsheets and they get out there and they start to highlight everything. And they create all these little steps and maps and they start to narrow what they want. Because everyone tells you, you need to really understand what you want. You have to understand what you're looking for. So you better narrow it down. Okay, that's one modality. That's one method to look at. But guess what? You are narrowing yourselves into like this huge funnel. Mm. And instead of saying yes, when you say yes, possibilities happen. When you say yes, potential happens. When you say yes, may it be fearful at the very beginning? It sure can. But it will actually dilute your fear over and over again. So saying yes allows you to try out new things. Case in point, let me give you one. I had a client a few years ago that got laid off and was looking for kind of, you know, new work. Very talented leader, very talented person, wow, it's lots of stuff going on. And actually was kind of an artist in who he was. It was like he had this way about him that was like really cool. It was like really artsy and on all this. And it worked in technology, right? Well, when he was looking for his new role, he went from like this artist who could paint any kind of canvas of life, right? Into like, okay, I want the role that is going to be only located here. It's got to be a company of 250 to 335. They have to have revenues between this and that. They have to have, it was like, what, are you kidding me? Are you really kidding me? That's okay if you want that. I'm not like trying to dilute that or discount that, but don't limit yourself to that. So he was getting this client of mine was getting calls from companies down in Palo Alto, down in more in the Valley, getting calls from all different places. And this was pre-COVID, before we went completely virtual. He was like, no, I'm not going to take that call. No, I don't want to work down there. No, I don't want to work in San Jose. No, I don't want to work in Cupertino. No, I don't want to work in Palo Alto. Da, 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 da. And I was like, go. You don't know where that may lead you. You don't know who you might meet on the way. You don't know who you might meet as you go down there and have lunch with people. You don't know who you might meet that will be so captivated with you that they might have a whole nother kind of connection for you. And it's like by saying no, you are completely limiting yourself. It's like a research scientist that is only looking for a certain kind of outcome. So they're not going to look at anything. They're going to, I just have to get this outcome. So my biggest thing is say yes. Now, I love to do that in life anyway. Mm-hmm. I always like to like say yes because I never know where it's going to lead. And it's led me to some really interesting connections and fun and stuff. And certainly it's led me to some things. It's like, wow, I've learned a lot about myself around this. But to say when you're in a job search mode and you're looking to create your next canvas, your next career canvas, say yes.
Yes, yes, yes. I love that. let's talk about the next stage of the job search process, which is interviewing. And let's talk about imposter syndrome. So yeah. When it comes to interviewing, for a lot of people, it can feel very unnatural and inauthentic to boast about the work they've done, and they suffer from imposter syndrome. And to interviewers, they can sense it. So, what advice would you give to these people on how to handle this feeling of imposter syndromes?
Own it. So I live with imposter syndrome. I think I was like, I had imposter syndrome in kindergarten. I had imposter syndrome probably in the maternity ward at the hospital. I probably like looked around like, I don't belong here. I'm not good enough. I'm not yet. You know, I live with imposter syndrome. I didn't know what it was until like 2004, like something. I had my careers at all these companies and I was like feeling like a fake. Like, you know, am I a fake? Do I really know what I'm doing, or a fraud? You know, and the thing with imposter syndrome is you have this feeling you're going to be found out, that people are going to like, oh my gosh, how Paul's a fake. Paul has been pulling this over on us all this time. Oh my gosh, get Paul out of here now. And it's a real feeling, right? Now, here's the best part about imposter syndrome. And this is why when I say own it, I also say celebrate it. Imposter syndrome affects about 90% of what we would call high achievers or super achievers in life. So if you feel like a fake or fraud, or you feel like you don't belong, or you feel like you're going to be found out, you know, I'm an imposter, I'm a fake, man, it's like, that is so cool. That is like the best thing, because it means you are a super achiever. You are a high achiever. You are one of those people in that particular domain, in that particular demographic. So applaud yourself for that, right? It's not like you're a performance problem or performance issue, because people that have performance issues in life, they think they're better than anyone else anyway. So they never have that feeling, right? They already have an inflated ego. But the person that is dealing with imposter syndrome, which is very common, is a super achiever, is a high achiever. So right away, I learned. I had no idea what it was, Wing. And finally, my coach back in 2004, she was asking me some questions about it, about how I felt. And she goes, you're kind of quiet sometimes, or you don't speak up, or you did that. And I said, well, I don't know if I really belong here. I don't know if I really feel I belong in this meeting, or I belong at this company, or if I even deserve this position. I was head of HR. So I was chief human HR officer at a big company. And I was like, I don't belong. Like, I have no clue what I'm doing. Like, how did I get this job? There's a lot of people that deserve it better than me. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, you got imposter syndrome. And I said, come again? Hello? What is that? She goes, imposter syndrome. I'd never heard it before. Once she named it for me, it was like, cool. I was like, give me the name tag. I leaned into it. I found out all there was about it. And it actually is an actual phenomenon. It's not really a syndrome, but it's actually a phenomenon that was coined in 1978 by researchers in the US. And it really is, it's a real thing. And so I learned all about it. And here's my biggest takeaway from it, Wing. It can happen to anybody. It happens across all age groups, all genders, all positions, all situations. It can new parents have imposter syndrome. Kids in school have imposter syndrome. Whenever we might find ourselves in any kind of new role, new situation, even if we chose it, we all of a sudden just like, uh-oh, what do I do? So when you get laid off and you begin to interview, even if you don't get laid off, even if you just kind of quit on your own, like, okay, I'm going to go out and find a new job. I'm going to take care of everyone. I'll see you all later. And you start to interview and you start to feel like, oh, wait a minute. I'm kind of feeling inadequate here. There's a lot of people that are smarter than me here. There's a lot of people that belong here. There's people that deserve this better than me. That's a natural feeling. So own that. And what I do with it, instead of trying to overcome it, which to me is like tiring, I get fatigued. It's like, life is hard. Life can be really fatiguing. You know, I like to take naps when naps kind of come out with my cat and I have a good time and I look to kind of relax, but I don't want to take a nap because I get tired. So overcoming something is always feels like tiring. I want to flow more. So what I learned to do is to flow with imposter syndrome and make it work for me. So when I hear that imposter voice, and I still do, by the way, when I hear that imposter voice come in my head saying, Paul, what are you doing? You don't belong here. Paul, wait a minute. This guy's going to buy your book. Paul, you're not really an author. You better tell him that you don't really know what you're doing when you're writing a book. These are all real things. I just sit there and I'm like, cool. I'm like, that's my imposter voice. And that means I'm doing something new. It means I'm doing something different. It means I'm nesting in the growth mindset per what we talked about earlier. And I take that and say, cool, I got this. I'm just, you know, anytime my imposter voice now comes up, instead of friction, instead of trying to overcome it, instead of trying to kind of hit it down, I'm like, wow, this is really cool. I'm celebrating it. Excuse me. And that has worked for me across the board. So I work with folks that have imposter syndrome. I like to say that, you know, that's part of our limiting beliefs, right? Our limiting beliefs is, I can't do that. I shouldn't be able to do that. Imposter wants you to say no to things, not say yes. Keep you in your fixed mindset. So it's all around owning that. Here's the best thing about imposter syndrome, per your question. When you go into, like, let's say you're going into an interview, you can maybe predict that your imposter voice is going to come with you. That imposter self is going to be there with you. And so you're going to know that your imposter is there with you. So you can prepare for it. So when you're in this interview, before the interview, during the interview, after the interview, whatever the situation, you just prepare for the imposter voice to come in. And you can just say, yep, I know somewhere it's going to trigger. It's going to come in. It's going to get into my head. It's in my head already. And guess what? That imposter voice is yours. You're choosing it. It's not somebody else's voice coming in. Or maybe it is if you play characters and play act a little bit like I do. But it's still your voice. You are authoring that. And you can choose then how you react to it. And what I do is I just sit there and it's like, there it is. Cool. I got it. And it means I'm doing something new. It means I am growing. And usually from that, just those 5 seconds, 8 seconds it takes for me to kind of respond that way, not just react, but respond, it goes away. It might come up again, sure. But then I do the same thing or something similar. And through practice, it's like any kind of muscle that we develop through practice. It just kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like, I'm beginning to dilute my imposter voice. It doesn't go away necessarily. And I don't look for it to go away. Cause for me, it's kind of like it's like an alarm. It's like ding, 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 ding. It's like, oh, that's cool. Okay. My imposter voice, I'm doing something new. And that's the best part about it.
Yeah. That totally resonated with me. Especially when I first started my podcast, like that voice kept telling me, who are you to start this podcast about finding your life's purpose? But over time, that voice, I accepted it and just let myself flow through this process of launching this podcast. And I still have it, like even before this interview. But yeah, like you said, it's part of me. And now it just lingers for maybe a second, but then I'm able to move on and be like, okay.
Look at you. You're doing incredible things. You got this incredible podcast. You have an incredible spirit of who you are and what you bring to the world. And if you let your imposter voice manage that, we wouldn't be doing anything like this. We wouldn't be on this podcast right now. If I let my imposter voice, I wouldn't have written my book. I wouldn't be out there speaking. I wouldn't be coaching. I'd be in some little room somewhere probably, not doing much. And that's why it's best to just let it flow, like you said.
Yes, thank you. I want to hear your thoughts about, what do you think of the idea of faking it till you make it, especially within the context of an interview?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there's a lot of, as you probably are well aware, there's a lot of provoking thoughts on that. And like, we live right now in such a divisive time. It's either yes or no, right? It's like, people either agree or not agree on something like that. So here's how I feel. Have I faked it till I made it? Absolutely. I mean, I'm never prepared for everything in life. I'm never going to be like, and yet there's no way I can prepare for something unless I take action and do it. So, and I know that if I'm going to jump in and do it, I'm going to learn as I'm doing it. So am I faking it at that point? I don't know if I'm faking it, perhaps, yeah. But I am taking the steps to make it. There are a lot of people that think, no, you can't fake it till you make it. I don't believe in that. Da, 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 da. That's fine. Whatever word kind of you can finesse around that. But if you jump into a pool and you go under at 6 or 7 feet, that's faking it. You're faking it until like, okay, I'm going to make it. I'm going to learn to get out of here. I'm either going to float, I'm going to swim, but I'm going to learn. But I'm faking it in that moment of like, yeah, I know what I'm kind of doing. Well, the same holds true. Like if you really want to do things in your life, and you want to take steps forward. And it might be a new role. It might be a new company. It might be a new relationship. You might want to try something that you've always had a fear around, like, you know, public speaking is still something people are kind of fearful. Look at you and starting this podcast. Well, did you know everything there was to hosting a podcast when you started? Exactly. You got in and you did it because you know why? You trusted somebody, and that person you trusted was yourself. So instead of faking it till you make it, I like to think that I trust myself until I make it, right? Yeah, that's kind of how I finesse that word, or excuse me, that phrase, because I figured this, I'm not a young guy, but I've gotten to where I am in my life based on myself, right? And of course, my community, my family, my friends, and so forth. But it's like, well, I've made it this far, and I'm still alive, and I'm doing pretty good, and I'm having a lot of fun. And so I think I know what I can figure stuff out. So I'm going to trust myself until I make it. I'm going to trust myself until I am feeling content or fulfilled in whatever that is.
Ooh, that, so I love that reframing from faking it till you make it to trusting yourself till you make it. Oh, that's such a great way to think about it.
Oh yeah, Wing, I'm the king of reframes. I mean, I've learned to reframe lots of things because we get. Again, it goes back to the science of what we talked about, the science of these phrases, the science of our talk, the science of what we tell ourselves. Reframe sometimes really works really well. And that's how we break out of the limiting beliefs of anything, right? But so, yeah, I've learned to reframe stuff all the time. it works for me.
Great. Just one more question about the interviewing stage of the job search process. So you mentioned about having your own authentic story and being in flow with your imposter syndrome. Is there anything else you would recommend people do to seed in the interviewing process?
You know, it's one thing to have your story, and it's one thing to be able to sort of circumvent or validate the imposter voice and to work through that. The other piece that I would do before, this is what I've done. I visualize how that dialogue is going to go. I visualize how that meeting is going to go. I visualize how that session is going to go. I did that today with you. I don't know you, but I was like, well, he and I are going to come together. We're going to manifest this whole thing. We're going to have some fun. I'm going to learn from Wing and, you know, like all this stuff. It's like, I just kind of visualize it. I don't sit there for like hours in visualization. I sit there maybe like 20 seconds, 30 seconds. I'm not a huge meditator, even though that can really work well. But I do it enough to kind of ground myself, and I just kind of visualize. I just understand what that looks like. And then what I normally will do in the actual, let's say, interview is I bring myself to that interview. I might show my vulnerability. I might show my humbleness. I might show lots of different things. Let me give you an example. This last year, and not quite an interview, but something similar. This last year, I was contacted by the Wharton School, and they said, "Hey, Paul, would you like to coach some of our MBA students?" I'm like, "Whoa, what? Are you sure you got the right Paul?" My imposter voice was like, "Oh, you got, no. You don't have an MBA. You certainly don't have an MBA from Wharton, Paul. And how are you going to coach these people? And why would they listen to you? Why would they even want to listen to you?" And I was talking to the Wharton folks, and they were saying, "Well, a lot of students deal with imposter syndrome. And we know that you're like an imposter syndrome coach, and you kind of talk about it and so forth and so on." So I went through kind of the interview process, and we had like an orientation of all the kind of the people and the coaches. And I got to tell you, Wing, it was your typical Zoom call, and everyone's, you know, up there, and everyone's smiling and looking really professional, all the different coaches and the Wharton people were saying, "Just tell us a little bit about yourself," you know, on the Zoom call. And I'm listening to one coach after another, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, these people are like so experienced. Oh my gosh, these people are like, you know, oh my gosh, these people have gone to the moon and back on coaching. These people have created spaceships on coaching." You know, and I'm sitting there like, "What have I done?" And all the imposter stuff. So they go, "Paul, it's your turn. Tell us." And of course, I was at the end, you know, towards the end. I had to listen to everyone else before me. And I said, I am dealing with imposter syndrome right now. I am dealing with not feeling like I feel like a fake and a fraud and that I don't belong here with all of these experts. And it was like silent. It was just kind of silent. And then other people were like, me too, me too, me too. And the Wharton people started laughing. And it was like, because what I showed there, I took a chance. And what I showed there was vulnerability. I showed my true feelings. I showed a humbleness. I showed, you know, like, wow, I am dealing with this right now in this situation. And they're like, everyone. And I got so many people on chat saying, me too, me too, me too, me. So I took a chance on that to show my vulnerability and to really speak to what was happening right there in that room. Interviews, when you're interviewing for a job, it's a contrived situation. Excuse me. The questions are contrived. They're meant to kind of assess certain things. But bring yourself to those answers. Bring yourself to those responses. Don't react to the question. Respond to the question. And what's the difference? Yeah. When somebody asks you a question, or even somebody says something, it doesn't have to be a question. We're human. We react right away. So we react with an emotion of some kind. Could be happy, sad, disappointed, mad, whatever, or just even kind of mediocrity, you know, like a blandness. It could be anything. That's fine. I work through that reaction right away. And then I sit there for like 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds, and then I will respond deliberately. I will respond purposely. And I will respond based on what I want to respond. I'm not letting my ego take over. So going back to that episode I showed you at Wharton when I was there, when they came to me, they go, Paul, tell us a little something about yourself. My reaction, Wing, was to jump right in and say, okay, I wrote this book and I've been coaching a lot of C-suite and I coach at these wonderful companies like Twitter and all these places. And I coach and I coach and I coach to show my ego, to show how good I am, to show I belong here, you know? I worked through that in like 5, 8, 10 seconds. And then I said, no, wait a minute. I want to respond differently. I want to respond with who I really am. And that's where that imposter piece came out like that. I didn't plan that. That was not premeditated. It was sort of in that moment, right? In that 15 seconds I had to respond. That's the difference between reacting and respond. Society, our world right now, we are based on reactions. Social media, our digital tech imprint, is all reactions. It's posting, it's likes, it's snapping, it's everything. Everything is based on reaction. And it's a reaction of 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds. And that's a long time, right? We have to learn to respond. And in an interview, that is the perfect place to show that you can respond, that you can listen to understand, not listen to reply, because listening to reply is what the late Stephen Covey said. Listening to reply is our ego. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, yeah, I'm not even listening to what you're saying because I've already got my reply already created, right? Because my ego is saying, you got to say this, got to make sure you get that in there. Da, 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 da. Responding is really listening to what somebody says, listening to understand it, and then responding deliberately or purposely. When that happens in an interview, that absolutely characterizes you differently from all the other candidates. Take it from someone. So here's what I used to do. I worked at Adobe at my last corporate gig. Great company. Adobe was like amazing company, amazing, amazing company. I loved it there. Didn't belong there, not because of imposter syndrome, but I didn't have my purpose quite found out. Had nothing to do with the company though. But at Adobe, I would come into the interviews in the last 15, 20 minutes to assess people on culture. And it would be something to kind of, it would be really interesting because I wouldn't, you know, once you got to a certain degree at a certain process at Adobe, like most companies, they know you can do the job, but are you going to be a fit culturally? So I would come in and ask just a few questions on the person, on who they are, on their story, on their strengths, on some of their blind spots, whatever might come up. And I would listen for their response. And if they would collectively, deliberately respond in a very purposeful way, I remember this one guy was like saying, I have no idea how to even answer this, Paul. Beautiful. Right. He probably thought he just like that was that X'd him out. But that shows a response versus a reaction, which is a reaction is going to be, I've got to get this. Okay. I'm creative. I'm innovative. I can delegate really well. I'm a good decision maker. They tried to get all the SEO adjectives in there, right? In the interview. Because that's what the science says you should do. That doesn't tell me anything about you. Doesn't tell me anything. So reaction is immediate. And when somebody is starting to answer my question before I've even taken a breath at the end of my sentence or my question, I can tell that that's a reaction versus they've taken a few seconds to respond. And that's the biggest difference. 90%, 95% of interview candidates don't spend a lot of time responding. They spend time reacting. Because and again, remember, Wing, it's what we talked about at the very beginning. It's that fear mindset. It's like, I've got to get this in. They asked me this question. I've got to show them that I know this. I have to show that I understand it. I've got to get these words in somehow. I get all that. And there's ways you can still do that and finesse it and still tell the story of who you are. And that's the key.
Love it. Yes. Respond, not react. Paul, let's shift gears a little bit. And let's talk about, so you coach leaders to help them find their voice, V-O-I-C-E. Can you explain what the voice framework is and how can people in like non-leadership roles apply that with their job search?
Oh, Wing. Yes. Great question. Good question. Good question. How do I respond to that? First of all, my response is everyone's in a leadership role, period. So it applies. So the voice acronym, my voice model is based on what I've gone through in my life. You know, as a coach, we coach our experience. We coach our failures and successes. We coach who we are. That's why I can help people in certain areas, but I'm not going to be the best coach in other areas, right? It's like anything. So I look at my life. I look at how did I find my voice? And I found my voice by understanding what makes me me, my values, what's important to me. And when those values are compromised, what does that look like and feel like to me? Do I want to work at a company that compromises my values? Do I want to work at a company that is aligned with my values? But before I can even make that decision, I have to know what my values are. So values are the first thing, discovering what really makes you tick, what's really important. It's like that, it's like that internal DNA, I guess DNA is pretty much, you know, it's that internal DNA, it's that GPS. It's what makes you tick. It's what's really important to you. Then it's taking those values and then aligning those to your outcomes. You know, we're a very goal-setting society, right? So whether it be goals you have for yourself, your family, your organization, your team, your job search, whatever those outcomes are, it's not just the goal, but what's the outcome you're looking for? What do you want it to look like? And more importantly, what did you want it to feel like? We don't do a lot of that feeling stuff. When I ask people, like when they're looking for a new job, and I'm like, what do you want to feel like when you're at that new company? And, you know, they go back on their spreadsheets. I don't know where's the feelings in all of this, right? But it's like, believe me, if you don't think about those feelings, you're not thinking about your outcomes. Guess what? When you get to that new job and that new company, it may not match what you think it should match, right? With what you want to feel. So start thinking that way now. The third is influence. So you got your values, you got your outcomes, and then how do you influence this in your life? How do you influence your outcomes? How do you influence who you are? How do you build relationships that are based on trust and credibility and respect? It's not just all like BFFs and I like you and all that stuff, which is cool and that's fun, but it's like, how do you influence? How do you enroll people who don't even report to you if you're in a position of leadership? How do you make friends that are trusting and credible? It's everything to do with influence, right? And how you demonstrate it. Then courage. So courage is the big C in voice. How do you take a step out of your comfort zone? How do you sort of like really understand what do I need to do differently here? It's not always action. Sometimes it's a new thought that you need to have. It's a new way of looking at something. It's a way of saying, gosh, I'm really judging this person right now, or I'm judging myself really hard right now. And to kind of do that a little bit differently. So courage is the courage to try something new. And to understand when you do that, it can be uncomfortable. It might be a little awkward, but that means you're nesting again in the growth mindset. And then lastly, it's all about expression. Expression is your brand. Like your brand walks into a room before you do, right? Your energy, your presence, who are you? So it's sort of like, what is that living legacy that you're creating? You know, don't wait until you're dead for people to talk about, oh, Paul was a great guy. Yeah, he was really cool. He's fun to go out with. He was da, 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 da. He helped me do this. He helped me do that. I've been to, you know, different kinds of life celebration of life services where people talk great things about people. I want to know that when I'm still alive. I want to create that myself, right? So what legacy are you creating of who you are? And that legacy is that legacy is your presence. It's your energy. It's your vibration. It's your spirit. It's your brand, whatever you want to call it. And that walks into a room when you're interviewing. That walks into a room when you're saying goodbye. That walks into a room when you're with your friends. It's that legacy. And I tell you, Wing, one of the saddest things I ever see is when I go into a company and I go in and I talk to like leaders at companies or managers and so forth. And I'm like, what's your legacy? What do you stand for? Who are you? What do you stand for? And they kind of look at me like, well, I don't know. Their eyes go really wide. And it's like, I've never been asked that question before, or I don't really know, or I think it's this. I think my legacy is this, or I hope it's this. And I'm like, look, if you don't create your legacy, if you don't author that yourself, it's your legacy, man. Guess what? It's being created for you by everyone else. Because we are judging society. So that's all happening out there. That's going to happen anyway. But own who you are. Own your legacy. And there's nothing better than when you go through a process like a restructure. You get laid off. You're looking for a new job. That's not the time to hide your legacy. That's the time to really like own it and walk into a room with it. So voices, values, outcomes, influence, courage, expression. It's what I use in my coaching. But more importantly, it's what I use in my life. It's what I went through to find my voice in terms of my purpose, in terms of what I'm supposed to be doing, which is what I'm doing right now on a podcast. But it's coaching and it's helping people. That's how I found it.
Yeah. I would love to learn about your purpose in a short bit. But before we go to that, so let's say someone is in their mid-career and they're not in the job search phase anymore. And so they're in their mid-career, they make decent money, but they feel stuck because they've already invested well over a decade in this career. And on top of that, let's say they don't have quite the credentials, or maybe they've never finished college, for example. Like, what kind of advice would you give to people like them as like the best approach for a career change?
Whatever you want. So all that stuff is not important. All that stuff, it's what you want to create. It's what you want to manifest. It's what you want to author. So degrees are not that important. It's what you want to do. It's your potential, but you have to break out of those limiting beliefs. When you say something like what you just said, like, oh, they may not have a degree, right? Which happens all the time. But guess what? That could be a limiting belief. Well, I don't have the education, or I have to go back to school for this, or I don't have the certification, or I didn't get an undergrad. I don't have a grad. It doesn't matter. You can author anything. The key is what inspires you, what brings you alive, what is that passion? And it's not just having a passion and following that, because we have to eat. And we have to we have to live. But it's like, what inspires you? That's one of the first things I work with people is like, what kind of just brings you alive? And you know this because maybe it's where you're working right now. Maybe it's part of the job, or maybe it's something completely different. So for me, when I told you I was at Adobe, and it was a beautiful company, great company, beautiful people, just, you know, it was like a beautiful, I was not engaged. I was like counting the hours that I would go in. It had nothing to do with Adobe. It had nothing to do with the culture. It had nothing to do with my role, which was a great position. And it had great perks and great benefits. And people wanted to work at Adobe. It's one of those companies like, I want to work there. And it was not always the easiest. And here I was like, uh-oh, I'm not engaged here. And it really took me some really self-reflection. I could have stayed in that job. And this was back in 2008 and 2009. And I could have still been there today and making excellent money and just kind of just going through the motions and just waiting until 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or Friday and all of the things that we do. And then get those Sunday night jitters where it's like, oh, I don't want to go back to work. You know, that's telling right there. And I knew that I had to do something different. I knew that I had something else to do. I wasn't sure what it was. It wasn't like, oh, all of a sudden I'm jumping from Adobe into being a coach. I had to kind of find that voice and find myself. And I went through that self-discovery that I just talked about with voice without knowing what it was at first. I didn't have voice all outlined. That came later, right? But that's the key. Is if you want to do the work on yourself, you can create your own inspiration for life. Or I hear it all the time from people. Oh, no, I can't. I've got kids. I got to go through college. I have people. I have my family has to eat. I have a big dog at home that has to like get to eat me out of house. You know, there's always excuses to not do something. But again, it's those self-limiting beliefs. And we use all of those other things as excuses. Mm-hmm. So it's up to us to do the work on ourselves around that. So it doesn't matter if, to your point, if they're mid-career, early career, or even late-stage career, you could always do something different. But find what it is that inspires you, because the world needs more of that now in terms of getting us out there and really finding what we're supposed to be doing to help and serve.
Yes, yes. I love that. Ooh. I want to go back to your point about values, the V of voice. So I think ideally, we want to find a company that shares the same values as us. But how can we really suss out what the company's value? I mean, it's easy for them to write nice sounding words about their values on the website. But then once you join in, you realize, oh, none of that is true. So what's a good way to find that out?
You've got to do your research beforehand. You're absolutely right. Any company nowadays has values, and they're lovely. They're laminated on cards sometimes, or they're plastered as screensavers or whatever, right? They're all over the place. How do they live those? How do they demonstrate those? And when do those values not show up in a company? So one of the questions I would always ask a company when I would be interviewing as a candidate is, why do people leave this company? Why do people decide to leave? I'd want to know that. When do your values not show up? How often does that happen? Now, those questions, and I've gotten different reactions to questions like that when I would question values, because I knew values are really important. And it would be like, and if somebody says, well, that never happens, or blah, 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 it's like, well, that's ridiculous, because it does happen, right? Or if somebody was put off by that question, it was like, okay, well, that tells me right there. If you don't want me asking a certain kind of question, that's a value. That right there is like, that's telling me what it would be like to work here, right? So you've got to take that chance. You've got to take that risk. You've got to, in the interview, step out of your comfort zone. Otherwise, to your point, Wing, you will find yourself at a company and you're like, how did I get here? I thought this company was going to be great. It looks so good on paper. It looks so good on Zoom. It looks so good everywhere else. And it's like, oh, no, no, no. And a lot of times, those things that make a company are not that hidden. They're right kind of at the surface. It's just a matter, though, of asking questions. People go to, you know, Wing, one last thing I want to say about interviews. People go into an interview thinking it's owned by the company. that the company owns the interview. They're going to control the interview. They're going to ask me the questions. I'm going to be the good corporate citizen or whatever we call it nowadays and answer those questions. And that's a bunch of BS. It's a partnership. You are accountable to make that interview a success. And I don't mean just by answering the right questions with the right words and showing the right energy and smiling a lot and doing all that. You have accountability to yourself. That's that advocacy I talked about. Otherwise, yes, the company will own the interview. And then you're just a cog in that. And then guess what? You'll get the job and you'll go in maybe, and then you'll just be another person without knowing what it's really, really like to work there. You have accountability to yourself to find out. And if a company doesn't like that, then that tells you right then and there what it will be like to work there.
Mm. Wow. Yes. Great advice. Thank you. Ooh. All right. I want to learn more about your history, your personal story of like how you landed on your current purpose. But before, how would you define purpose?
You know, yeah, it's a great question. It's my why. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the why. To borrow Simon Sinek, it's like the why. Why am I here? Why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, what am I doing? Why am I here? Mm. What is my purpose? Yes. But I don't get into all the vocabulary piece. I just like, why? Why am I doing this? Yeah. And I ask myself that. Mm. And that's what I ask myself at Adobe. It's like, why am I here? Why am I doing this if this doesn't feel like it doesn't inspire me? It doesn't bring me alive. It doesn't feel like I'm contributing. I'm making great money. I'm working with some fantastic people, but I'm not growing. And that's my choice, by the way, again, not the company. And so it was like stagnant. And so my why was a big question mark. It was a big question mark. Mm. So the purpose for me is what is your why? Mm. Why am I here?
And so what would you say your current purpose is?
Oh, easy. It's to serve people. It's serve people to help them to help them find their purpose, their reason to be here, their inspiration in life. It's so simple for me. It's like in all walks of life. I work in the business or corporate domain because that's my history. I'm a corporate survivor, right? I've thrived in the corporate world. I've gotten through it. I understand the norms and all the political stuff that happens in companies and all the crazy stuff that happens in companies too. But really, when I fundamentally get down to the street smart piece of it, I just like to serve people. I just like to help people find what they're supposed to do here. And that's where the voice came from. So the whole brand that I have, Find Your Voice, that was given to me by a client. I was working at a client at a huge company. And I kept talking around, you have a voice. What does your inner voice say? Use your voice. Stand up with your voice. Don't hide behind somebody else's voice. I kept saying this, right? And my client, who to this day is a really close friend now, he just looked at me and he goes, that's who you are. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you are the Find Your Voice guy. You help us find our voices. You help us create who we are. You help us create our uniqueness as in our life. And he gave it right back to me, right? I'm like, looking at him, I'm like, whoa. And he goes, that's who you are. So it was beautiful because it was like he was serving me, right? And so I took that and I ran with it. And I took the voice piece because it just felt right. You know, the mind and our ego could say, oh, no, you can't use that. You can't use the word voice. It's all used all over the place. You can't do that. Da, 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 da. My heart was like, that's it. That's what I do. Mm. I help people find their voice. So once I get through kind of people think I help them sing, it's like, no, I'm not going to help you find your voice that way. It's more the inner voice. Yeah. You know, because people think, oh, are you a voice teacher? I'm like, no, I'm an inner voice teacher, you know, and more importantly, I'm a coach. I don't tell. I help you explore, and we explore and we partner together. And that's it's all. And Wing, I guess you could still say, I'm trusting myself until I make it. Mm. You know, I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. I've been out of the corporate world since 2009, and I built my business, and I'm having a ball with it. I love it, but I'm still learning. So I never feel like I'm at like the pinnacle. Like, oh, I've made it. You know, I faked it till I made it. It's like, no, I don't know. I don't know when that's going to be. And here's how I know that what I'm doing is what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't ever see myself stopping. And that is so true. I don't see myself stopping like, oh, I'm going to like give this up in a few years. Or da, da, da. I might change things. I might do it this way. I might do it that way. But no, like, I love it. It's what I was meant to do. Mm. And that's what I love to help people find, is what they're meant to do. And that could be anywhere in life, you know, in any kind of scenario.
That's very inspiring. I'm curious to hear. So before you found this alignment with your purpose, what was going through your life that made you lean into this purpose? Does something happen that forced you to kind of explore? Can you share more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we all go through things in life, rites of passage, right? And we all will have, things will happen to us in life, period. And we don't always choose what all those things are, but we can choose how we respond, not react, but respond to those things. And sure, in 2009, my father passed away. And my father was like a brilliant guy, lovely guy. He's an amazing guy. And I talked about legacy, right? So I was at his celebration of life and people were getting up. So he lived a wonderful life. He was like 88 years old. So he had a full life. When people are getting up and they're taking the microphone and they're talking about what a wonderful man he was and what he meant to me and what he did 40 years ago when we were neighbors. And I'm like, 40 years ago, 40 years ago. Wow. I'm like, whoa. And he was an airline pilot. So people were saying, oh, he was a wonderful captain and we loved him and we had so much fun on day. He treated us so well and he was so respectful and da, da, da. And Wing, I sat there and I knew this about my dad. So it wasn't a surprise, but I sat there and it just sort of hit me. And it was like, uh-oh, what are they going to say about me? Mm-hmm. What are they going to, you know, it's that old adage. It's that reading the obituaries, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm not saying we recommend doing, but it's like, wow, what kind of life did that person have? What did he or she mean to somebody? But more importantly, was it the life you were meant to have? And what are people going to say about you? And that's where it hit me. It was like, oh no, oh no. It was like, Paul was a great HR leader. Paul helped me interview 400 people. Paul helped me develop a compensation plan. Paul helped me restructure my organization. Paul helped me develop an incentive plan. I was like sitting there like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. That's not what I want to be known for. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I was like, That was a huge awakening for me. And I happened to be in a church at the same time, and I'm not particularly religious. I'm more spiritual, but it was like, okay, I've got to find what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's not here. So that was when I was at Adobe, and it wasn't going to another company. It wasn't leaving Adobe and going to another company. It was not it at all. It was like, I've got to find what I'm supposed to be doing because it's different. It's different than what I'm doing now.
And did you explore different areas before you landed on coaching?
Yeah. So I had had coaching before. I understood what coaching was, but it wasn't like just a natural, like, oh, I'm going to do that. Mm. I did some consulting. I did some, I knew that I wanted to like help people. I knew that I was good at certain things. I knew as an introvert that there were certain things that really taxed me and my energy. So I knew that I wanted to do something that was smaller, you know, kind of a smaller group kind of dynamic and all this other stuff. So I just tried different things, but I was willing to step out of my comfort zone and willing to try that. Again, I could have said, you know what, I'll do that next year. You know, I'll do that next month. You know, I'll do that in the year after. And I said, I can't. I'm sitting here with kind of the perfect opportunities and kind of my dad kind of, you know, kind of kicking me in the butt to say, get out there and try something. right? So that you know what your legacy is. And so I did. I tried different things. And I prepared for it. It wasn't like I just went out, you know, I prepared. I wasn't like I just completely quit my job and so forth. I prepared financially. I prepared structures and things like that to in place, support structures. But yeah, I tried it. And then coaching, it just sort of like, oh. And I was at one of my consulting clients and they said, would you help us coach somebody? And I'm like, oh, and I was like, oh, I don't know how to do that. I'm a fake around that. They're going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I did know what I was doing, right? And it felt really right to me. And all of a sudden that just kind of took on more of a life of its own.
Mm, thank you for sharing. So if there's one advice you would give to someone who is trying to figure out their purpose, what would that be?
Understand who you are, understand what you're inspired by, understand what doesn't inspire you, understand what's really important to you, understand what's not important to you. So we like to use the term sometimes boundaries and you know, and it kind of like a framework, but really you've got to do the work on yourself. And this is not like, you know, believe me, it's not rocket science, you know, because if I can do it, anyone can do it. It really is really understanding though, sort of like, what is really important to you in your life? What's not that important to you? And what excites you? What doesn't excite you? What inspires you? What doesn't inspire you? So I always ask people like, do you ever have a situation where you may be at work, you may be at home, it doesn't really matter where you're at, but you start working on something, you start doing something, right? Mm-hmm. And you're just into it. And it's like 9:30 a.m. And then you look at the clock and it's like noon. And you're like, where did the time go? Where did I lose? You know, wow, I lose. That is right there. That right there is a manifestation of something you love to do, whatever that is. Now, it could be the actual task or it could be something around that task. So it's really understanding what it is. And for me, Wing, when I did that exercise on my own and I looked at and I thought, what is it that like, what really kind of, you know, what excites me around stuff? And it was like talking to people, finding out what makes them tick, asking some questions, asking like, and before I knew it, I'd have these conversations with people and it would be like half hour, 1 hour, an hour and a half, 2 hours. I was like, wow, that became apparent. Like, okay, I love doing this. And I'm not a talker. It's not like I'm talking because I told you I'm an introvert. So it's not like I'm sitting there like being verbose. But I love helping people find what they're supposed to do. I love helping people find their inspiration, all that. So that became really important to me. Like, okay, I really, really, that doesn't feel like work at all. That's really integrated into who I am. And so I applied more of that. So to me, it really is understanding what makes you tick, what makes you not tick. What, you know, there's a great saying out there that I've posted on social media a few times, a meme, and it says, don't get mad if people suck the life out of you. Quit giving them the straw.
Mm.
So understand what sucks you dry emotionally, what tires you. Not just physically, because physically is kind of easy. That's more the science. The emotion piece, though, what really like what drains you emotionally, and that will tell you a lot about what you want to look for then in a situation. Mm-hmm. Maybe a new role, a new job, a new relationship, a new partner, new husband, new wife, new company, whatever mm-hmm. that might be.
Mm-hmm. Great. Hmm. So let's say someone did the inner work and kind of discover, oh yeah, this is where I would like my, this is my purpose. But they're kind of like stuck in the comfort zone. They're like, you know, the limiting beliefs and fears holding right. them back to actually step into it. What advice do you have for that person?
Okay, it's Wheel of Fortune time. Give me a vowel. A, give me a consonant. C, give me another consonant. T-I-O-N, action. It goes back to awareness, advocacy, and then action. And you nailed it. You nailed it right there. People do. There are people out there right now There are people out there right now in the world, right now, that know exactly what they want to do, but they're so scared to take that action, that leaving this, you know, leaving the CZ, the comfort zone. And I think the comfort zone is like a danger zone. Mm. It just kind of sucks us all in, like, ooh, it's so nice. You know, it can be real, it can feel good, but nothing ever grows there because we're not growing. But it's like, ooh. Now, do we sometimes stay in the comfort zone? Absolutely. We're human. And I choose sometimes maybe to stay in the comfort zone, but it's a choice. Do you see what I mean? Versus I'm just doing it on autopilot. So you always want to make that choice. And so if you know what you want to do, but you haven't tried it, you haven't tested it, you haven't gone and done something different, then you'll never be able to know if that's really what is meant for you or not. So yes, it doesn't mean you have to quit your job like I did. It doesn't mean you have to go out and drop your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, or whatever it is. It just means though you've got to test the validity of what you're doing. And sometimes when going back to what we're talking about here, when you're looking for a new role, not by choice sometimes, you know, or in a sense, and you know, theoretically it is by choice. If you get laid off, it's your choice to get laid off because you chose to go to that company to begin with. So you got laid off, right? You might have not chosen that action, but everything we do in our life is a choice. And so we have to live with whatever that results are. So when I've gotten laid off in the past, it was like, I don't want to be, but it's like, wait a minute. I chose to come to this company 6 years ago, you know, any company we can get restructured out of. So, you know, the fact that it happened, I didn't necessarily choose the layoff, but I chose to come to this company. So it was a life decision for me. And so I've got to live with this decision and I'm going to do the best I can. Everything we do in life, every relationship we have is a choice, you know, so we choose, and especially as we evolve. So that's why when you're in a position that people are in now, looking for a new role, looking for a new position, looking for a new company, don't just go in there and follow like the map and the steps without bringing in your feeling, your heart, because you will end up with a situation that can be very, very similar, as we've talked about.
Thank you. Before we move on from this topic of purpose to the closing lightning round, is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I think the work you're doing with this podcast is very, very critical. Really helping people to kind of find what they're supposed to do. So their work on purpose, right? And I love that because we don't spend time doing that. We go to work, we go to a job, we go into our relationships, we get up in the morning, but we don't necessarily take the time to like, why am I doing this? What's the purpose? And what's the outcome? You know, how many times, you know, here's a fun little exercise sometimes. When we're in the business and corporate world, you know, we get spun out with all these meetings that we have to do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the meetings are by choice and sometimes they're not. They just appear in our calendar or whatever. And I would always talk to the leaders I work with and say, every meeting is an opportunity for you to show up differently, for you to try a new behavior, for you to try on a new thought, whatever it might be. So when you look at all those meetings you got lined up for each day, and we get kind of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get any work done? I have meeting after meeting, or I'm frustrated, or I don't want to go to all those meetings, or why am I in these meetings? I don't like these people. Why am I in these meetings? Think of a purpose. What's the purpose of me being in this meeting? And what's the outcome that I'm looking for? And make it your own personal laboratory about what you can do. You know, so that we become sort of our own scientists. And that we blend with our own artists, and we use the company we're at or the work environment we're at as an opportunity to try on something new. This happens, you know, it also works with people that are in school. As I said, I coaching at Wharton and talking to these incredibly talented people who are getting their degrees and so forth. They go to all these courses and they have all these cohorts and they have all these projects, and it's like, and they fly all over the world for as part of the school curriculum. And it's like, look at each one of those as an opportunity, not just to complete it and get an A or whatever your grade is that you want, but look at it as an opportunity to try something new on. To you know, that person, you know, that person over there frustrates you for some reason. Try on something with that person. What is it about that person that triggers you in a certain way? Our whole life is a laboratory for us, but it's up to us if we want to just put the science hat on or put the science hat on and the artist hat, and then create, which is something, create kind of our own vision, our own canvas, our own work of art for the future. It's up to us.
Yeah, I love that. So it's basically like applying the growth mindset experiment to every meeting and every interaction, right? Essentially.
And it takes commitment to do that. It takes commitment because our fixed mindset, our ego, will always say, oh, no, don't worry about that. Just go to the meeting and just sit there like you normally do and get frustrated and walk out at the end of the meeting and just go to the next meeting and just sit there like you always do. That's what we normally do in life. We just run on, you know, on kind of autopilot, right? And it takes a commitment and a muscle to go and continue to do and nest in that growth mindset. But it is, and it can be messy. It's a lots of color and it can be messy. It's not all sterile like the fixed mindset. But man, oh man, can it be fun? Will you learn so much about yourself? And more importantly, it will keep you alive. It'll keep you alive with vibrancy and color and keep you alive with energy and inspiration. It's the best.
Yes, it is the best. All right. I think it's time for the lightning round. I'm just going to ask you a bunch of short rapid fire questions. You can answer as long or as short as you want.
Okay.
All right. So what is one thing you like to do to relax?
Read.
What is one thing you like to do for fun?
Walk.
What is one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
My cat.
And what is one habit you always do for a great day?
My morning ritual, where I take just 10, 15 minutes in the morning, and I just do some reading of whatever kind of interests me. And then I reflect on that and I just ground myself and kind of visualize what the day will be. So I'm not a big journal person, and I'm not a big, like, you know, I would, you know, I'm just not, I don't spend a lot of time writing, but I just take the morning ritual to be about 15 minutes, and it anchors me and it grounds me for the day. And it by far centers me for the rest of that day.
Love it. What is one habit you are working on?
Not judging so much. So I, like a lot of people are, as humans, we have the capability to discern, you know, discernment. And that's a strength. I can look at something and assess it, and I can decide, oh, do I want to do that? Do I not want to do that? Well, discernment on steroids is judgment. And so I judge myself against other people. I compare myself against other people. That's where the imposter comes in. I judge other people about, what are they doing? Who are they? Da, 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 da. So I'm aware of that. And what I do is, when that comes out, and I do it all the time with my clients, and I do it in situations, I'll just say, oh, that's my judge speaking. I need to, like, take that back. But I'm not going to take it back because it already came out. But that's my judge. And again, being aware of that helps to dilute it.
Great. What is the most important lesson you've ever learned? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
The golden rule would say, and I'm terrible with these kind of phrases, right? But here's what I'm going to say. The golden rule always says something: treat others how you would like to be treated. Treat others how they want to be treated. So I've learned that, because again, think about it for a moment. Oh, treat others how you want to be treated. You know, bum, 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 bum. Well, that's ego to me. That's like, well, I'm going to treat Wing how I want to be treated. No, if I'm really serving Wing and I'm coaching Wing or I'm working with Wing or Wing's my friend, I want to treat Wing how he wants to be treated. That's really the alignment there, right? It's not how I want to be treated. Maybe it's the same way, but it's not about like, oh, just treat people how you want to be treated. That's assuming that we all want to be treated the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's true at all. I remember this when I was in Ireland and I was at Trinity College or Trinity University in Dublin, which is a brilliant university and stuff. And they had this thing hanging on one of the outside walls of the buildings. And it says, great minds don't think alike.
Mm.
And I took a picture of that. And that goes up on when I speak at conferences. Sometimes I put that on the slides up there or on the projector thing or screen is what I'm trying to say. Think about it. Great minds don't think alike. We like to say great minds think alike. No, great minds don't think alike. And hence, that's what people want to see when you're interviewing, that you have a great mind, but you don't have to think alike.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Treat others how they want to be treated. I love that. I'm going to embody that this week and see what happens.
You should.
Yeah,
you
that's great.
You seem like somebody who does that.
I haven't really like verbalized it in my mind that that is what I do already, but I want to be more intentional this week.
Yeah.
Focus on that.
That's great. Good.
What is a book that changed your life?
A book that changed my life. I would say a book that added to my life or a book that provided me a different way of looking at my life. The change is up to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to let a book change my life, that's my choice. So I would say one of the books is Dyer's book or Wayne Dyer's book, you know, The Purpose of Intention. That's like his kind of like his quote unquote Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about the seven forces of intention and all these things around intention and living a life of purpose, living a life of intention. Right. Versus just going about our lives like so many people do and just letting things happen to us versus really having that intention that you just mentioned. You just used the word. That was brilliant. You just used the word. But yeah, so here's what's interesting. When I read the book back in the 90s, I couldn't wait to put it down and go out and party. Like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta go have fun. I gotta go do, you know, it was like I wasn't ready to receive it. I wasn't ready to hear the message. I didn't think it was like, well, what is this book? Because Wayne wrote it, you know, decades ago, right? Then it was like, wow, no, wait a minute. This book has a lot to it. So I picked it up again, like over this last couple of years. It's been around for a long time, but it like, whoa, it's got a lot to it. One more book I would say, even though you only asked for one, is Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way.
Ooh, yeah, I read that recently.
Okay, you read that recently, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, another book. She just had her 25th anniversary of that book. And when I got that book, I will never forget this. I was getting my hair styled at some Union Square salon in San Francisco. It was like cool, it was fun. And the hairstylist, I loved. She was like, oh, I'm reading The Artist's Way. This was like also in the 90s. So I went out and bought the book. I didn't even think about it. I went out and bought the book. Kristen said it's a good book. I went out and bought the book and I couldn't even get through. I was like, what is this? Like, what is she talking about? Like, what? Again, and I gave the book away. I gave it away. It's like, I'm not going to read this. It's like, come full circle. And I think it was like during the pandemic kind of shut down, but when things started to kind of open up, I went to the Green Apple bookstore over in the Sunset area of San Francisco on 9th Avenue. And there they had a big display of Julia Cameron, 25th anniversary edition of The Artist's Way. And it was speaking to me and I picked it up and then I read the whole thing and did all the exercises over the 12 weeks. And it was like, wow. And that just shows when we are ready, as it says, the teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of got stuck halfway. And I think I need to revisit it when the time is right, as you said.
When time is ready. Mm-hmm. I didn't do all 12 weeks in 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I put it down, and when it felt ready, I put it back. And that's what you have to do. Give yourself permission to just do whatever feels right for you on anything like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing instead?
That's a great question. It's really hard for me to understand what I would, if I wasn't doing what I was doing today, because this is my calling. Mm-hmm. This is my purpose. This is my why. But I look at attributes of what I love to do. I love to help people sort of brand themselves, right? And I'm really good at that. And that's why I love branding. And I love that whole thing. So I think I would be working in like an advertising agency in the brand management piece, helping companies brand themselves. Now, that's not anywhere near as fulfilling as helping people.
Right.
But I love that stuff. I love it. Like when soup comes out and they've got a new label, I like, wow, that is so cool. How do they decide to do that? Campbell's soup or whatever it is. Cause it's like, I love the whole branding story mm-hmm. around that. So I think I'd be doing something in that area.
Mm. Cool.
In terms of helping companies versus helping people. But I'm meant to help people.
Yeah. And how would you describe your ideal life?
I have it right now.
Perfect, lovely.
I have my ideal life right now. I mean, I look at each day with like just like wow, abundance. Mm-hmm. Like I can't believe I get to do what I do. I get to travel. I have wonderful clients in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I have wonderful clients in Singapore. I have wonderful clients in Bangkok. I have wonderful clients in the Philippines. I'm going to Taipei in early May to speak at a conference. I get to travel. I get to do this. I get to meet some incredible people, and I get to do what I was meant to do. So it doesn't even feel, it's all integrated. My life is blended. My life is like, It's not like I have like work life balance, which I don't even know what that means anyway, right? Because it's all life, mm-hmm. and I just get to live this life that is just so full. And if it's not, then I get to choose what I need to do around that. And mm-hmm. that is understanding that life is a choice always.
Mm, that's beautiful. That you are living your ideal life. How awesome!
Yeah.
Do you have any last requests you would like our listeners to do?
I would like every listener here to understand that they all have something unique about themselves. They all have something unique that is a message that they can contribute. It doesn't mean they have to quit their job. It doesn't mean they have to like go find another job. It doesn't mean they have to end a relationship. It doesn't mean there has to be a huge event in their lives before they find it. But do the work of self-discovery. So it's that awareness, that advocacy that yes, you can do this. You can be your own advocate. Self-advocacy is just that. It starts with it's ourselves. Don't look for others. Don't look for that external validation that the imposter loves to always put out there. Mm. Just own it yourself. And then take action around it. The world right now, you know, we just live in like a real, it's kind of the world's always chaotic. I mean, the world is always chaotic. And the world can always be divisive. So I don't know if it's any worse or more now. You know, it's easy for people to say, oh, it's so terrible right now. Yeah, well, I don't know if things were that great back in the 30s and 40s and 20s. You know, it's like, it's all relative, right? Mm-hmm. But we have so much abundance in this world. Just look at how you and I are communicating. We don't even know each other. But mm-hmm. just look at what we're doing right now. We get to do this right now. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like, so look for ways to really bring out your uniqueness. And if you're in a situation where you're looking for a new job and you're looking for work on purpose and you're looking for something new, bring yourself to that and use that as a laboratory. Don't just fall into the old algorithm of got to do this, got to do that, and then eventually I'll get a job. Figure out what it is that really brings you alive, because the world needs more of that. And that's kind of my parting gift. There's nothing that makes me happier, more alive, more vibrant, than when I'm working with people and I just see that spark kind of come in. And maybe they haven't figured out everything. And that's cool because none of us have, but they're on a path, and they're on a path of discovery, of curiosity, and they're navigating that path on their own. And that to me is like the best of everything. And that's again, that's why I'm here. That's what I was meant to do.
What a perfect way to close this interview. So inspirational, Paul. Where can people find you?
They can find my, great question, website, Paul N. Larsen, LARSEN, good Norwegian name.com. Mm-hmm. They could shoot me an email at paul@paulnlarsen.com. I'm happy to answer all emails. It's like, no biggie. I'm on Twitter at Voice as a Leader. And I'm still on Twitter, and I'm going up and down with Twitter as we go through all the different changes there. I'm also on LinkedIn. So a lot of people are on LinkedIn, obviously, probably in your demographic and your audience. So I'm at LinkedIn. So shoot me a connection request. I'm always happy to do that. You can follow me on LinkedIn, but you can also connect with me for a little bit more intimacy. So anything like that.
Awesome. Cool. I'll be sure to include all those links in the show notes so people can find you. Oh, Paul, wow. Thank you so much for sharing all your inspiring insights and stories. I am so confident that the people listening to this are going to come away so inspired, and like they'll get the next job of the dreams based on what you've lit up from within them. So thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you so much for having this incredible community and building this container where we can share all this. Because the work that you're doing is incredibly important and critical. And so thank you. And it's been great. I've loved our conversation. I've loved our dialogue. You've inspired me. And I'm just really, really happy to have been an honor to have been a guest on your show.
Thank you so much. I feel exactly the same way about you and this conversation. Thank you so much.